Hey everyone, welcome to the Balanced Dietitian podcast. I am your host, Marie-Pierre, and for all my English friends out there, you can call me Marie. I am a registered dietitian with a background in psychology. My passion in life is to help individuals heal their relationship with food and their bodies. If you're tired of dieting and tired of restriction, you are at the right place. I'm hoping that this podcast will help and support you as you heal your own relationship with food and your body, and give you the tools, the resources, and the knowledge that you need to finally ditch the diets. Every week, you will be hearing from guest experts and myself on all things food, body, and mind. I am so happy that you're here, and I cannot wait to support you on your journey. Let's get started. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Balanced Dietitian Podcast. Thank you so much for being here with me today. We have a wonderful guest today. We have Emily Murray from Murray Nutrition, who's a registered dietitian who works and specializes in eating disorder care. I'm so pumped to have Emily come talk to us today, as we're going to dive deeper in introducing weight-inclusive care when it comes to eating disorder recovery. So we are going to talk about the recovery process. We're going to talk about why it's so important to be weight-inclusive when it comes to helping folks recover from their eating disorder. We're going to dive deeper in understanding what's the harm of not being weight inclusive and how we can all start opening our minds a little bit more and understanding why this is so important. We're also going to talk about the fear of gaining weight. This is something that we hear all the time. So I do want to offer a trigger warning that we do talk about recovery process itself and people who do recover from eating disorders and all of that stuff. We don't go into any specific details around behaviors or anything like that. However, I know the topic of eating disorder recovery is always hard to hear if you're in the middle of it or thinking about doing it. So just know that that's what we're talking about today. And with no further ado, here we go. Everyone, welcome to the Balanced Dietitian Podcast. Today we have an awesome guest and I'm so excited to have her on. So today we have Emily Murray, who's going to come talk to us about eating disorder and disorder recovery and the weight inclusive approach through recovery. So hi, Emily. Thank you so much for being here.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm super pumped that we get to do this. It's been like, we were talking about this before recording, like we've been trying to do the podcast for a while. And then life got in the way.
Yes.
Here we are today. So before we get into the topic, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit more about you and what got you to do the work that you do today?
Yeah, totally. So I'm a registered dietitian in the greater Nashville area. I didn't always, you know, start out knowing that I wanted to be a dietitian. I went into college and was actually a psychology major, which is interesting because that's very pertinent in terms of the field of eating disorders. But then I decided I wanted to switch to nutrition. I had a history of struggling with IBS. And so I felt like, oh, that'd be really cool to help people with their diets and IBS and for me to learn more about what I should be eating and all that stuff. So that's kind of why I made the switch. And in that process, in college, I actually ended up developing an eating disorder. So I had kind of some disordered eating before that. But in college, it really, really ramped up. And so in that process of my own recovery, I worked with an awesome therapist and medical physician and a dietitian. And I was already in school to be a dietitian. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, this is the type of dietitian that I want to be. This is what I'm supposed to do. So that really, you know, was such a difficult journey and process that ended up, you know, resulting in something really cool and beautiful and redeeming. So yeah, so I have a personal history of an eating disorder. And that's kind of how I got into the field and the non-diet approach and health at every size and eating disorder recovery and all of that stuff.
Oh, that is like so interesting. It's actually so interesting when you think about like the number of dietitians who've also had like eating disorders. Like often it's kind of like what gets us into nutrition, being like, let me want to learn more. But it sounds for you like the eating disorder only started after you started the nutrition program.
Yeah, I would say, but I don't think it was because of the nutrition program. Mm-hmm. My nutrition program was pretty, I mean, there was definitely some stuff, some diety stuff and some weight stigma stuff, but overall it was pretty good. I think it was just like my own, you know, my own research. Mm-hmm. Like, I think my eating disorder saved me from being like a, for lack of a better word, crazy dietitian, you know, someone who was like, diet drill sergeant, like clean eating, you have to eat this, why would you not eat organic, non-GM, you know, just crazy, you know, stuff that's not, you know, super warranted in all cases or is attainable for a lot of people. So I think my eating disorder really helped me find a much more balanced approach. And that's what I tell a lot of my clients too, is that if they do the recovery process, they're going to have a healthier relationship with food than a lot of the general public, because disordered eating can be pretty normalized in our culture today. And our clients really put in the extra work, whether it's eating disorder recovery or intuitive eating, they're being really intentional about, finding balance in their relationship with food. And I see that they're often healthier than some of their friends and family members who aren't in that process.
That's so true. Like, I feel like through recovery, you get to learn so much about yourself and really dive into that relationship to food and body. Mm-hmm. So you like leave from the other side being like so much more in tuned. Yeah. And how did you fall into like anti-diet and health at every size? Like, was that something that like your therapist and dietitian were supporting you through recovery? Or is that something that afterwards, that through your own recovery, that you fell into?
Yeah, definitely. So I would say, you know, definitely we talked about, you know, principles of, you know, non-diet nutrition, anti-diet nutrition, all foods fit, like there's no good or bad foods, all sorts of things like that. And, you know, topics around, you know, body neutrality and health at every size and things like that. But I didn't really do a lot of my own I was just kind of trying to keep my head above water and doing the process and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a couple of years in, I started to really do a lot of my own research about health at every size and intuitive eating and all of those things. And reading the science behind it was really helpful for me. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this isn't just something that could work for people with an eating disorder and it's just kind of what they have to accept. Like, there's a lot of science behind this and this makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I asked because today we're going to talk about weight inclusive care and recovery. And I know that it's not necessarily the most, I guess I don't want to say popular approach, but a more common approach. And anyways, here in Canada, weight inclusive care through recovery is not necessarily the thing. So for example, through my own recovery, it was a lot about weight, being like, oh, but don't worry though, like you won't get fat after this, or don't worry though, like it was not very like health at every size approach.
Yeah.
So I was curious to be if your experience was different, if it was a lot more inclusive, or if it was just like whatever, and then after it was more you being like, okay, let's learn a little bit more about this, the science behind health at every size and how we can become more anti-diet and weight inclusive.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and I've talked about this a little bit before on other podcasts. I think, you know, my recovery team, I think, was great in terms of, you know, just kind of really, you know, affirming and reinforcing the idea that wherever my weight settled, like that was my healthy weight, you know, when I'm not restricting, when I'm not using any other behaviors, like that's where I need to be, regardless of what my BMI is, regardless of what, you know, might be predicted, you know. And so that was really, really great. There were people, you know, health professionals who missed, you know, my eating disorder when I was struggling, I think because I was not quote underweight. I had lost some weight and I had some medical stuff that were definitely signs of an eating disorder. And they just said, oh, that's, you know, you've lost some weight, that's great, you know, whatever. And I was like, okay, you know, and there was a part of me that was like, oh, great, I'm fine, you know, that eating disorder part. But another part of me was like, man, I was kind of hoping they would maybe say something, but I guess they didn't. So I guess I'm fine.
Yeah. Oh, and we'll talk a little bit more about that because I think that's such an important piece of the pie when we're just so focused on weight and like being like eating disorder equals underweight. And then we miss mm-hmm. so much. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll just do like a quick, briefly definitions of eating disorders. We have talked about eating disorders in the past, but maybe it's just like quickly, like what is an eating disorder? I mean, can we answer that quickly? As briefly as we can.
Right. Like we can talk for 5 hours on what an eating disorder is. Yeah. Yeah. But eating disorders are, you know, they're complex. How I like to kind of phrase it is they're complex mental illnesses with, you know, a physical component and a nutritional component. So they're mental illnesses at the core, but they affect all organ systems, all body systems, and they affect all people, all genders, all races, all ages. And they can be really, really harmful and really, really, you know, detrimental. For a person to have an eating disorder, you know, their relationship with food and their body is pretty impaired in some way. They're doing some sort of maladaptive behavior with food or exercise or something else, and it's, you know, it's just not working.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. So it can impact all. It impacts our relationship to food, but also body. It has a psychological aspect, a physical aspect. It kind of like touches everything and relationship, like you say, like someone who has an eating disorder, like all areas of their lives are impacted.
Yeah.
So when we think of recovery, I think there's also a lot of myths behind like what is recovery, but what does that entail? Like when we think of like, okay, someone going through recovery, what does that look like? What does that entail? What's that recovery process?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a really good question because there is not necessarily one, you know, there's not a consensus on the definition of like recovery or when a person mm-hmm. is quote, quote, recovered in the field of eating disorders. And so that is going to vary, you know, a little bit from person to person, and everyone's experience is different. You know, some of my clients or colleagues or friends or people that I know who have gone through recovery really are kind of at the point where they're not, where they don't have eating disorder thoughts, and they are like totally like, they just don't even think about it. And they're like, have totally moved on. Other people have been in a really good place for a very long time and they still have eating disorder thoughts come up, and that's fine. That doesn't mean that they're recovery is less than or anything. It just means that they kind of still have some of those thoughts come up, but they're not acting on the behaviors, you know? So, mm-hmm. and there's people who, you know, totally stop using all eating disorder behaviors, and some who significantly reduce the behaviors, but still, you know, use some. So it kind of just depends on the person, their story, what they have access to. I think in general, the more that we can help a person move towards a life that is fueled by their values and that is not inhibited by their relationship and or behaviors with food, body, exercise as much as we can, I think that's pretty darn good.
Yeah. And I love that you say that recovery is so personal from one person to the next, and it will look different for everyone. And our definition of what is recovery will change based on that. But I like that, that it's like, I think like there's a part of like, you know, like the medical stability and like the physical health, and then the normalizing of nutrition. And through that, it's just that this gray zone of how that would look like for one person, but there's no wrong way to recover. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes when people start recovery, it's like this, you know, like, have you ever seen this meme of like expectations of like, you start here and you end there, and it's like the straight linear line that like for mm-hmm. progress, and you will recover and it's fine. And you're like, but actually it's more of this like up and down of roller coaster, and like each roller coaster is a different ride for everybody, and it looks different, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
So normalizing that like recovery doesn't mean one thing for one person. It can be, yeah just very different.
Totally.
Yeah. I like that. So now we'll talk a little bit more about that weight inclusive aspect, or that lens that we bring to recovery. So what does it mean to like bring in that weight inclusive care in the eating disorder recovery process?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and it can be really tricky too, because for clients who maybe are using, you know, certain eating disorder behaviors, or they might need to restore, you know, weight or things like that, looking at their growth chart or growth curve. It's like, we do need to take weight, you know, and we do need to talk about that. But how do we still make that, you know, weight inclusive is, you know, a really, really good question. So, you know, in terms of weight inclusivity, I think it can be helpful to talk about, you know, what not to do, right? So kind of what you were sharing with your experience, like reassuring clients that they won't get fat or that they won't gain more than XYZ pounds or that, you know, things like that, not super helpful. I can't even believe that I have to say this, but prescribing weight loss to clients with eating disorders, not okay. You know, putting a client who's in a larger body on a smaller meal plan or like a restricted meal plan is totally not okay. So that, you know, that's how weight stigma can show up, you know, underdiagnosis, not detecting people's eating disorders early on, can all be really, really problematic. Mm-hmm. In terms of being, you know, weight inclusive and practicing from a health at every size lens, I really like to talk to my clients about a couple of different things. So, you know, first and foremost, again, kind of, you know, what I was told in my recovery process is that your healthy weight for you is when you are really working to reduce those eating disorder behaviors. You're choosing foods that you love for enjoyment. You're being mindful. You're paying attention to how those foods make you feel. We're attuned with our body. We're moving in ways that are fun and joyful or not, and that's okay. And we're taking care of our mental health, you know, emotional health as well. So really, you know, taking, you know, the focus off of numbers at some point. And then also just having, you know, conversations, some of my clients, like, what if I get to this weight? What if my BMI is in the XYZ category? Like, this is so bad, blah, blah, blah. So providing education on health at every size, for sure, and what it means to truly be healthy and, you know, debunking some of those myths and misperceptions about weight. And then also just sitting in the discomfort with some of my clients, like, I don't know where your weight is going to settle. You could stop gaining weight here. You could keep gaining weight. I don't know, but I'm here, you know, with you to support you in that.
So many like gems in what you said. Because yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I like how you bring the piece of like weight stigma. And I think that's why we like include the weight inclusive care, to try to like reduce the stigma as much as we can. And we've done a podcast episode explaining a little bit what weight stigma is and how it shows up in healthcare in general, but a lot in the eating disorder realm as well, right? I think when it's like, it's almost like when you start changing your nutrition intervention based on the person's body, mm-hmm. being like, if you are in a smaller body, here's how I'm going to support you. But if you're in a larger body, then we kind of like changed it. And that's where it's like, oh, no, like, this is fat phobic. Like, this is where, like, it's not ethical to do so. So looking at this way of being inclusive, I think it's just like bringing a little bit more of that like ethic care into the eating disorder process too, to be able to support our clients.
Yeah, definitely. And dietitians are not taught to do that. Our education is very weight centric. And so it takes some unlearning of that and really, you know, being aware of, you know, things that biases that we've, you know, internalized and things that we've learned, and really just being intentional to not do those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting when you start doing this work too. Like, I remember one podcast guest I interviewed, she was working with people with eating disorders, and she was also working with like general population. And then she saw that like, it's almost like what you recommend to people in larger bodies are what people with eating disorders we see as symptoms, right? Like the restrictiveness, the obsession. But sometimes it felt that, but someone in a larger body, it's almost more accepted and normalized of like, oh yeah, you should restrict and focus on weight and body all the time. Like, you should do all that over exercise. Yeah. But then when you look at someone in a smaller body, you're like, oh, but this is disorder now. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, where we really see the contrast of like, no, it's disordered all over the place, right? Yeah. It's just like being able to unpack our own fat phobia to be like, oh, okay, that's where it's coming from.
Yeah, definitely. And I talk about this a lot, you know, with my clients with who are in larger bodies or even just bodies, you know, larger than mine or larger than they want their bodies to be or whatever. You know, we talk about how eating disorder recovery, you know, all around is so hard. It is so, so hard. No matter what your body size is, it is probably one of the hardest things that most people will go through. And when you are living in a larger body, there's another layer added to it. Because some people, like if a person is underweight and they gain a little weight in recovery and everyone's like, oh my gosh, you look so healthy. I'm so glad you're living your best life, blah, 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 whatever. And a person in a larger body gains weight in recovery, or they stay the same, they're still going to have comments from health professionals or random people or whatever, you know, kind of telling them that they need to lose weight. And that can be really, you know, frustrating and discouraging and sad. And I think there's kind of a whole another layer of grief that has to be gone through for those clients as well.
Yeah. And I like that you acknowledge that too, of like, it's almost like we have this like own personalized work. Like, I almost picture this as like, if you're on an island doing recovery, it's really hard because it's like a lot of work, but then you take that into diet culture and it just adds everything. Like it just gets harder.
Yeah.
Right? Cause our body can start feeling unsafe when we are constantly told that our body is not adequate. And I think this is where like the work that you're doing and a lot of anti-diet dietitians are doing with like being weight inclusive and really bringing that lens into the work is so important.
Yeah.
I also wanted to just touch point fast on like what you said too, of like how many eating disorders can go undiagnosed too. If we only focus on weight, do you want to speak a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's interesting. I mean, even just like the OSFED atypical anorexia, there's not a lot that's atypical about that. I have many, many clients who exhibit all the characteristics of anorexia, but they haven't lost weight or they haven't lost enough weight or they're BMI, whatever, you know, and it's just like, why is there even, you know, a distinction here? You know, that alone is stigmatizing. I'll also talk with therapists who, you know, maybe aren't trained in eating disorders, but who will like wait 8, 9, 10 months to refer a client. They're like, yeah, I think they might have an eating disorder, but I don't know. They're not underweight. You know, they'll say something like that. And I think, you know, overall, I think, and, you know, medical physicians as well, you know, pediatricians sometimes are able to detect it if, you know, someone's just is on their normal growth curve and they just plummet, like that's a pretty obvious sign, but also, you know, not. And yeah, I think that a lot more people are probably underdiagnosed than we even realize.
Yeah, 100%. And for listeners, if you don't know, like the atypical anorexia, it's basically anorexia. It's the exact same thing, except you're not underweight. Like one of the criteria of anorexia is like being underweight, and then it's atypical when you're not underweight. But you're like, oh, but there's so many that why is it atypical? It's actually all in the same.
Yeah, it's actually common. It's not atypical.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, so that makes a lot of sense of like how it does go unnoticed sometimes. And I think the exact same thing of your experience of like doctors not necessarily being able to see it and then being also validated for that weight loss. And I think this is where, you know, commenting on someone's body can be so harmful because we don't know. And I remember same thing within my own eating disorder where people would comment on my body. And I was the same boat that like I was never in an underweight body. I never looked like I had an eating disorder. So like people complimenting that body all the time just like validates and fuels the eating disorder.
Yeah.
Which is super tough when you're going through that as well.
Yeah. Because, you know, I'll talk with my clients about how, you know, their worth does not come from their body. And, you know, how can we build our identity outside of their eating disorder? And it's really hard when they're being complimented about their body. Oh my God, you look so good. Blah, blah, blah. You lost weight. Oh my God. And yeah, that's really, really tough, you know, but also those comments are so Well, first of all, they're inappropriate. They're just flat out inappropriate. And number two, they, you know, they're so fleeting. It's like if we're connecting with people, you know, only based on how we look, or if people are only giving me more attention and praise because they notice my body, like, you know, there's more to me than that. There's more to our clients than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's where it's so tough because it's so normalized. So when we're doing this work, and for some people, like some people I've worked with, I'm sure it's the same for you. Like just being weight inclusive is like a whole new thing that they're like, wait, what? Like I can be okay with my body now. Like it's okay. Like, and you're not, you're like, you're seeing me beyond my weight. Like, mm-hmm. It almost seems like it's so bizarre where it's like, this should be the norm. This should just be how it is. So anyways, all this to say, I do think that like weight inclusive care is so important in eating disorders. And it's something that we work a lot through, right? It's always like the state overweight, but also sometimes we do need to check weight. Like you're right. Like in terms of like weight restoration and things like that, that needs to be there. And it's just one part of the recovery. One myth that I hear often is, well, recovery is just about weight restoration. Like as soon as I regain the weight, then I'm fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What would you respond to that?
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of what we are talking about all goes back to the most, well, I'm not going to say the most, one of the most harmful myths about eating disorders, you know, that you have to be underweight to have an eating disorder. Like everyone, not everyone, but I think society as a whole, when they think of an eating disorder, they think of like a starving, emaciated actress. Like that's what they think. And that is so, so, so not, just not accurate and not all encompassing of who suffers from an eating disorder. Yeah, there are people that need to restore weight in eating disorder recovery because, you know, their behaviors have led them to a point where they need that to be healthier physically. And we have to remember that eating disorders are mental illnesses, you know, and so restoring weight does not fix the chaos going on in the brain. And I think for many of my clients, the weight, once they've restored weight, their recovery journey can be even more difficult because some of their friends or family members who were maybe once concerned now think, oh, they're doing great. They're doing awesome. They look so much better. Mm. Wow. You know, and, you know, yeah, I'll have clients who really struggle with that with their families. Their families might seem really concerned in the beginning of the process. And then eating disorders, you know, are really hard and taxing. And so they get weary, their families get weary, they're doing okay. But then it's like, wait, do you still care? Do you still see that I'm suffering? And I think, you know, I think that's one of the hardest parts is learning how to communicate with family members and friends that, yes, I've done some hard work and I'm doing a little bit better, but also I'm kind of not. And this is really hard and I still need your support in this.
Mm, I love that so much because it's so true, right? Sometimes the physical appearance shows the world how much we're hurting. Mm-hmm. I've had a client say that to me. She said, it was something about like my physical appearance shows how broken I am and that I need help. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense when there's so much onto that body that the weight piece really plays a big role. But something that you said that I think is really worth repeating is that going back to the definition of eating disorder is that it is a mental illness. So even when the physical side seems to be better, there's just still so much work to do, right? Like the work is not done just when your body is quote unquote where it needs to be, mm-hmm. because it's so much, there's so much to the eating disorder and it takes like so much into like our belief system and our thought process and our relationship. And there's still more healing to do. So the body piece and the weight piece may be part of the pie of recovery, but it definitely isn't the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And when clients are in, you know, that sort of stage in recovery, and that's a part of their story and their journey, we work a lot on, like, how can I communicate how I feel and what I need without manipulating my food or my body? Like, how can I speak and put a voice to this instead of using behaviors to try to communicate?
And I love that so much. That is so awesome. And I think that's why, like, again, part of the recovery process is that you get to learn so much more about yourself and learn these skills that are so wonderful, right? Like communication and being able to like state how we feel and what we need. Yeah. Yeah. But things that sometimes we're just like not taught on how to do.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So now let's talk a little bit about that fear of weight gain and recovery. So we've talked about like this approach of weight inclusive care, something that's super important is not being like, oh, hey, like, don't worry, like you won't get big or you won't get this, because I mean, that's, I think it's just continuing the harm. Again, validating of like, oh, it's okay because you won't be this size, which again, it's hard because I think that's one of the, almost one of go-tos, I think, for health professionals, like, oh, I just want to reassure you, but it's actually causing more harm. So how can we support clients or people who are maybe going through recovery who have the fear of gain weight? Like, how can we help them with this type of like distress away around gaining weight?
Yeah. And that is, the golden question, right? Like when I engage with my audience on Instagram or when I'm with clients, like this comes up so, so much. Mm-hmm. I think it's really valuable in, you know, really exploring like where this fear is coming from, you know, how long has it been around? Where has it been reinforced? Has it ever been personally experienced? Has, you know, the client ever experienced, you know, bullying or negative consequences related to their weight or not, or have witnessed others experiencing that? And really kind of starting there, just bringing awareness to all of those things, I really, you know, like to do with clients. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of, I think also looking at some of the messages that we all receive about bodies and what bodies are valuable and what bodies are not valuable, and, you know, which is so horrible, right? But that's really what, you know, diet culture and, you know, the world that we live in, like it really puts smaller, thinner bodies on a pedestal. And also bodies that have no wrinkles and that are young and that are blonde and that are white, you know, and it's like all of those things. And so we really start to look at some of those things with a more, you know, critical lens. Like, yes, there are people that look like that and that's fine, but, you know, does everyone look like that? No. And body diversity is a very real thing. And we're not all supposed to look like that. And we're not all supposed to be the same weight. So that's one of the places that I start. There's so many different places that we can start, but we try to kind of go through, just kind of question, you know, where did some of these things come from? And I think one of the biggest things too in recovery is that you can have the fear of weight gain and still choose to do the recovery action anyways. Practice some of that distress tolerance, whether it's distraction or self-soothing or affirmations or things like that in the moment to help the person.
Yeah. I love that so much of, you know, we're not trying to be like, oh no, don't be afraid. Because I think seeking to understand of like why we are afraid and what comes up for us. Oftentimes, again, like when we're afraid, it's like we feel, again, our body won't be safe, or we won't be safe, we won't belong anymore. And the discomfort is just so high. And when we think of like even like diet culture history, and when you're able to like walk yourself through like your own history with diets, with your relationship with body and food, but also seeing like the history of like our culture and diets, it makes sense that we have a fear about being in a larger body because of how some people in larger bodies have been treated. So I love the fact that it's all about like the understanding piece and maybe like some of that healing there, instead of, oh no, but don't be afraid of weight gain. Right? Because that is simply not helpful. And I know I've had some clients who are like, you know, parents who are like, but don't just care. Like, you're beautiful. And you're like, this is wonderful to say and supportive, but also the understanding of why it's so scary and validating. Yeah. Like, it does feel scary. And then here's what else we can do. And like the power of and like, yes, and we're still going to advocate for you and for you to be here with us. And here's how we do this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important too to think about like, okay, like, so we can see, you know, or you maybe have experienced or see through our culture that, you know, in general, not always, but in general, on a societal level, maybe on interpersonal level, like people who are in larger bodies are not treated as well, you know, in terms of their weight as people who are not in larger bodies. So, you know, what are we going to do with that? Are we going to spend our life trying to shrink our bodies and fit that mold that our society has put on us? Or are we going to let our bodies settle wherever they need to be and advocate against this and say, hey, this is not right? You know, like body diversity is a real thing. Everyone should be treated with dignity and respect, regardless of their body size, and really do some of that work. Like, what type of person, you know, do you want to be? And a lot of my clients are like, oh my gosh, I've never thought about that.
And it's such an empowered thing of like, okay, when we understand that like system and being like, okay, we've been all victim to the diet, to diet culture, and then being like, and then we can choose to like drop out and then do the work, right? To be like, no, this is not okay. And I think that's what's super cool with our day and age is that there's a big movement, I think, towards that as well. And you can find communities, you can find on social media can be like so great, also not so great, but it can be so great for like seeing body diversity and like looking at different bodies and really expanding your views. Because when we only look at the media or like TV or movies, like that's what we see. We see thin white bodies. That's what beauty is. So when we're able to like start allowing your brain to see other evidence of what is beautiful and other bodies include more of that diversity, that is super supportive as well.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. And I love that like tolerance toolkit of like tolerating those really, really hard emotions and doing the work anyway. So you said a few things that people can do. Like, what are tips for like tolerating, like self-soothing distractions? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, so you know, there's you know, different kind of categories of you know, different coping skills that people can use. So, you know, there's cognitive. So, you know, we can definitely try to challenge some of the thoughts that come up. Like eating disorder might say, oh my gosh, if you eat this, you're going to gain weight. You know, a person might have a mantra or repeat back, like, you know, this meal is helping me, you know, recover, or this is what I need to do to get better, or a healthy weight for me is when I'm not restricting or I'm not using other behaviors. So they might have mantras to kind of try to combat that eating disorder thought or that eating disorder voice. You know, if the distress is so high that kind of talking to yourself isn't really working, you know, deep breathing can be something that's really helpful, grounding through your senses and kind of naming and labeling things in your environment based on sight and smell and touch and bringing yourself back to the present moment. Oh, I'm noticing that I'm having all these eating disorder thoughts in my head about weight gain. Okay, so that's hard. What am I doing right now? Like, I'm sitting in front of my sandwich and my chips and my fruit. I need to eat that. I'm going to take another bite, that sort of thing. And then any sort of, you know, relaxation, I think, you know, stretching, again, the breathing, like yoga can be really good. Any sort of, it just depends on the person. Like some people will like, you know, weighted blankets or, you know, like more of that pressure. There's a lot of different things that people can do, and I'm sure you walk through, you know, some of those things with your clients too.
Yeah, and it's super cool when you start building that toolbox for yourself to be like, all right, I got me. What can I do? This is coming up. And I think that's going to be trial and error for a lot of us if you haven't had that experience of like taking care of yourself in that way, that you're going to be trying different things. Like I remember for me, like being creative was when I would want to try, and like even to this day, I'm like, okay, drawing does not work for me. It's not very like soothing. So you're going to try different things. Some will be super great, some of them won't be great, but it's that like empowerment that like you got you and you can support yourself through that uncomfortable feeling. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here today and just yeah, sharing your genius with us and really talking about this super important subject when we are thinking about bringing that weight inclusivity and recovery care.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit, like, what are you up to now? How can people work with you? How can people find you?
Yeah, definitely. So definitely for, you know, a lot of education and support and advocacy work, they can follow me on Instagram. So that's at Marie Nutrition, M-U-R-R-A-Y, and then nutrition. In terms of working with me, they can visit my website, www.marienutritionco.com. I'm not quite accepting new clients right now. I have an associate who is. And, you know, what I tell people is you never know. You know, if you get on our wait list, we have cancellations that happen pretty frequently, you know, so you might be able, you know, we might have an estimated time for the wait list, but you might be able to get in sooner than you think. So if you're interested, definitely reach out.
Yay, that's awesome. And all those links will be in the show notes. So you guys can go follow her and like definitely follow her on Instagram because you post like a lot of like golden nuggets all the time.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's wonderful. All right, so let's finish with our fun questions. The first one is, what is your favorite food?
Okay, yeah, I always feel so conflicted about this. And I normally list off like four. So I have like some favorite food groups, I guess. So my favorite food, I think, is macaroni and cheese. Mm. But my if I had to choose like food, a couple food groups for the rest of my life, I would choose mac and cheese, chocolate, bread, and fruit. And that's what I would do.
You're like, you asked for one, but let me give you four.
Yes.
It's such a hard question.
Like, I have to. We have to have it. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
It would be to talk to dogs.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I always imagine my dog, like, what he's thinking and, like, making scenarios.
Yes, I know. Right? I would pay a chunk of money to be able to talk to my dog.
That is awesome. What is your favorite way to self-care?
My favorite way. Oh, there are so many. I have a lot of different ones. I like taking a nap on the weekends. Like I'll get up early with my dog and spend some time with him. So I get a little less sleep, but then I take a nap and make up for it. And so that's always good.
Ooh, I love those like weekend naps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Okay. And then last question for you, what does balance mean to you?
Yeah. So when I think balance, it's hard to define with words. We can define it with words, but I think for each person, balance is more of a, you know, a feeling. It's something that's intuitive. You know, we can over time learn to tell when we're overdoing it or we don't have balance. Like our body will tell us, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, we will know when there is not, you know, as much balance. So balance is really, you know, being in that place where, you know, you can manage your emotional experiences, you have bandwidth in your life, you're doing kind of a couple different things, you might be doing work or school, you might just be taking care of yourself, you might be doing some stuff with your family, but overall, you're not so spread thin that there's no time to like reflect or process your emotions or be with yourself. I think all of those things are really important in balance.
Oh, I love that. It's like doing your everyday life stuff, but in alignment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that so much. Well, thank you again for being here. This conversation was really, really wonderful. And I really appreciate you just showing up with your genius and talking to everyone here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so fun.
Wasn't this podcast episode just amazing? I loved having Emily on and talking about her zone of genius and really like the eating disorder recovery process. If you have been struggling with an eating disorder, if you are ready for recovery and you are in Canada, my team and I would be so happy to support you. The Balance Practice is a team of specialized dietitians and therapists who can support you in outpatient recovery. we support folks from struggling with their eating disorder to full recovery so you too can enjoy life, right? That your eating disorder no longer needs to take over. So if you're looking for that one-on-one aspect, if you are looking to recover from your eating disorder once and for all, and you are here in Canada, go check out thebalancepractice.com/services and see how we can support you through this. You deserve to recover and you deserve to live a life far, far away from your eating disorder. So if you've enjoyed this episode, please leave me a rating and review. It means so much to me to hear your feedback on the podcast. I love to be able to do this conversation and I hope that it brings you tons of value. On that note, my friend, I will see you next week in the next episode.